There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
I'm joined by Keren Bobka. She's senior partner at Holborn Assets with more than 20 years of experience on advising on all things financial. That includes life insurance, medical insurance, inheritance, tax planning and wills, savings and investments, retirement planning, mortgages, personal and corporate financial planning. This is your chance to have your questions answered. So if you need some insights about your money, this is the time to get in touch. We'll be discussing Keren's latest column for The National. She's now written 500 and her tips for teenagers and the latest financial news. Good afternoon, Keren.
Good afternoon.
Do you like our new digs?
It's smart, isn't it? It's really smart and shiny.
I'm absolutely loving it, I have to say. So thank you for joining us. Really, really do appreciate it. So 500 columns for The National.
Yeah, well, I think I've just submitted 502 now.
Oh, my goodness.
But 500, that feels like a milestone, doesn't it? And I think it'll be the beginning of November this year. It'll be 10 years and we'll do something to mark that. But
free money!
Well, no. Gosh, quite that. But see, I might be celebrating this weekend. But wow, the time has gone so fast, though.
Mm-hmm. It really
it's
has. And you've been with us on the radio for quite some time as well. You went to our studios in Studio City and you were even on our studios before that down at Maxim Bridge.
I know, I'm an old hand, aren't I?
I love it. Well, thank you for coming with us to our new studio. As I said, we're in the heart of Dubai Media City. So give us a wave. We're in the Dubai Properties headquarters building and we've got windows so we can see you. So do give us a wave. Absolutely thrilled to be here and really, really loving it. So Keren, school breaks up soon. Although I have to say, inconveniently, my daughter finishes nursery this week. Just, you know, just really
annoying. The dates aren't the same. I think there was an idea, wasn't there, a few years ago. KHDA said that all the school dates would be the same to make it more convenient for parents, but that simply does not happen.
No, but a lot of people will be heading to the airport next weekend, myself included.
Oh, good luck with that.
Strength.
You're going the first weekend?
Uh-huh, going
on the 6th. Oh, I wish you strength.
Thanks, my dear. With two kids, I must be absolutely out of my mind. But lots of other people will be there, I'm sure, so we can solidarity in that. Either heading back to their home countries for a few weeks or for the summer or heading on their holiday. So I really want to pick your brains about holidays abroad and spending when you're overseas. It's a big topic and something I think a lot of us put a lot of time and planning into getting the flights, getting a good deal on the hotels. And then there are quite some common pitfalls when we could actually be saving money when it comes to that day-to-day spending. So in your opinion, what's the best way of spending when you're abroad?
Well, obviously it depends where you're going, but in the majority of cases, a little holiday budget is no bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
Set a rough amount. You'd obviously, if you're away and you're having a good time, you don't want to be sort of too stingy about things, but you don't want to blow everything that you'd set aside in the first few days.
Don't have that horrible feeling when you come back and think, I had a great time, but I'm literally going to be paying for it for the rest of the year.
Yes. Well, in an ideal world, obviously you would have planned for the costs of this holiday.
Don't look at me like that, Keren.
After your last holiday. That's the theory, that you should start saving up for it so you don't end up, you know, just ruining that credit card and putting everything on there. So ideally, you plan ahead for it. So, it's largely paid for by the time you go.
Mm-hmm.
And then you plan ahead so you've got the cash ready for spending. And that's, on the credit card front, that's a worry. Is it's very easy, particularly if you're somewhere where you're not overly familiar with the currency, to kind of forget what things really cost.
Yes, bit of monopoly money.
Yes, it's easily done, isn't it? And unfortunately, there are lots of phone apps and all sorts now. And I think most places you go, you're going to pick up Wi-Fi, even if you don't get a SIM card where you're travelling.
Mm.
Although those are remarkably easy and quite cheap to do, aren't they? So you can cross-check the real cost of things. And I'm not just talking about paying for a coffee or an ice cream. I'm talking about buying the bigger things when you're away. And often, people will buy souvenirs or go out for fancy meals. Just double check the real cost sometimes.
What are the apps that you recommend, Keren? And the things that's on your phone that should be on mine?
Exe is the currency app that I use. That's a really common, simple one.
Do you know why I like Exe? And I'm sure it's the same for many, but you've got United Arab Emirates at the top. So you've got AED right at the top of the column. So you haven't got to scroll down. Makes me happy every time.
And you can also add in multiple currencies. So if you're still not entirely living in dirhams, and let's face it, a lot of us still convert many things back to a home currency. You can do a conversion from your holiday currency back to US dollars, sterling, euros, whatever it happens to be that means the most sense to you, as in terms of actual costs as well.
Okay, good tip there. Now, what about taking your ATM card away, do we tend to face charges at ATMs when we're abroad?
We generally do. Now, it does vary by bank. It depends on where you're going. But you will, in most cases, whether it's your debit card or your credit card, you'll get additional costs from using it overseas. It could be an explicit charge, or quite often you'll get a lousy rate of exchange. And so, and quite often the banks will say, oh, there's no cost for doing this, but they'll sting you on the exchange rate. So check, see what the setup is with your bank and your card before you go. It may not be too bad. And of course, it's always really useful to have as a backup, because you just don't know when there might be an expense. So it is useful to have that.
Speaking of exchanges, where is the best place to get your money exchanged?
In terms of cash, I don't think there's an awful lot to choose for relatively small amounts. And we're not talking 50,000 dirhams here, I hope. Really do hope, in most cases, for holiday spending. One of the sort of high street mall currency places, the banks, in most cases, there's not a lot of difference if what you're going to be exchanging is, you know, a few thousand dirhams to go somewhere. And bear in mind, in most cases, it is better to do this before you go. You don't want to get somewhere and then have to change dirhams. Bear in mind that most countries don't want dirhams. Therefore, they're not going to give you a very good rate of exchange. Mm-hmm. Here, we're used to converting and exchanging so many currencies that compared to many countries, the rates are a lot better for us.
Is the airport still an absolute no-no when it comes to converting, or have they got more competitive?
Ooh, always. Well, apart from here, actually. Again, there's an anomaly. It's not so bad if you arrive here or leaving here. The rates, I think, are not particularly out of whack with what you'll get elsewhere. But in many European airports, oh, good grief, what a rip-off. Seriously, don't. My father-in-law did this. I'm safe saying this because he won't be listening to this show. He's not in the country. Exchanged money when I think the rate from sterling to here was something like 5. And he foolishly exchanged it for something like 4.3. We were horrified. Yeah, don't do that. Don't make his mistake.
Okay. So plan ahead, which is always good, a good maxim when it comes to money anyway. Yeah. What about travel insurance?
Have it. Do get it. Because it's one of the basic tenets of financial planning, isn't it? Is what if and just in case. Mm-hmm. And like all insurances, you hope that it's a complete and utter waste of money. But something goes wrong. You're going to need it.
Well, it's interesting because a new survey came out just today from Yala Compare, and that's revealed that 65.4% of UAE residents do not take out travel insurance ahead of an international trip. And this is a similar survey actually conducted last year, found around 60% didn't take it either. And this is despite policies being available from around 81 dirhams. A lot of people saying it's the cost of that travel insurance that's a deterrent.
It's not a lot. I mean, you may be wasting your money if you're going for something that's really, really basic, because it may not cover some of the things you want. And again, it's that whole thing. Read the small print, see what's actually covered. But it is worthwhile. Now, also check. There are cases where if you've got a bit of a fancy credit card, you may have that included in there. If you have booked the trip using that card, watch out for that.
Good caveat.
So just watch out for that. Double check what you've got. The banks often do very good deals for customers on that. And if you're going away for a couple of weeks, you're taking, you know, your favourite clothes. You want to make sure that you're insured. If you've got a camera and electronics, we all travel
with everything,
don't we? Just so we've got the fancy phones, the tablets, etc., cameras, you know, all those things.
And interesting, it was lost baggage that was the most common issue faced by UA travellers over the last 12 months, with over 23% having experienced. This is me touching wood.
But
I've never lost bag.
No, me neither. And I don't want to tempt fate.
I know. And I have to say, our fancy new studio, it's no wooden desks, but I'll touch my head just to hope that in the next couple of weeks.
It's my sort of travelling fear.
Oh, me too.
It makes
waiting
my
stomach drop.
I'm always a bit tense. Whoa. Until I see my bag, and then now I can relax.
Absolutely hideous. Karen, question here for you. We're talking about summer money. Question saying, we're about to go back to the UK for the summer. Would you suggest changing cash here or transferring? I'm talking about 8,000 dirhams. Thank you.
Right. So that's back to the UK, home country, where presumably you have a bank account.
Yes, sounds like
and
it.
And that makes a difference. Yeah. For anything from about 8,000 dirhams upwards, yes, it is worth using a third-party currency exchange to actually move those money. You'll get better value. You can use your bank, but generally they are not competitive. Even if, again, if they say they don't charge you a fee, they make the money on the rates. If anyone wants a recommendation for a company, send me an email and I will introduce them to a great company that's regulated that can do all that for them. Dead easy. Don't even have to leave the house. There's definitely savings to be made.
Good stuff. So upwards of about 8,000 dirhams.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
worth sending over. Okay. Hope that helps. Any questions for Karen here until 1 o'clock, get them in 4001 on the text or message for free using the Dubai iMessenger app. That's also the way of getting in touch to enter our competition to win two tickets for Definitive Rat Pack happening at Dubai Opera on July 3rd and 4th. Lots of guesses coming in. We'll have another clue for you very, very shortly. Karen, a question here about leaving a company. No name on this one. And we know we're talking about finances. So if you prefer to stay anonymous, that's absolutely fine. Saying, I want to leave a company that I work for. And as a counter offer, I've been offered 7% of shares in the company if I stay. I tried to look up as much information as I could. However, I could not fully understand if those 7% is actually worth staying for. Part of me feels like I'm just being fooled. Any thoughts?
Well, there's a lot of issues to look up there. It's quite complicated. Now, is this a UAE company that's quoted on an exchange here? Is this where is the company a quoted company? Can you look up the value of the shares? Or is it a private company where they're not listed and disclosed? In which case, you would actually want to see a set of accounts to see what the value is in a company. Because a lot of companies, although they may be, you know, given a shareholding, is there any intrinsic value in that? So it's actually establishing the value. Are they available to you straight off? Are there something that vests, i.e. you take the money from at a later date? Obviously, everything has to be in writing, always in writing. Don't trust anything that isn't. But it really depends on the company and whether they're listed or not and the value there. That's what we'd have to look at.
So you'd need to enter that agreement with a full understanding of what those shares are worth rather than it being a wishy-washy down the line.
I've seen it happen before where people have signed contracts with a value and there's no real value in the company. It's just the people working there. So that's not necessarily worth anything. We're not necessarily talking a public quoted company where there are shares traded and you can see a value on that.
Okay. Lots of questions coming in for you, Karen. You can add yours to the conversation, 4001 on the text line. You can message us for free using the Dubai iMessenger app or you can give us a call. We've got a new number for our new studio. It's 04871 5500. Joined on the phone now by Farah, who wants to speak to you, Karen, about savings accounts locally and abroad. Farah, how can we help this afternoon?
Hi, I was just wondering, looking at setting up a new savings account, is it better to look into an offshore option? Because the interest rates locally are not amazing. So I just wondered where the best place to be would be to put savings.
Right. In terms of savings, and good afternoon, by the way, interest rates are low in very many places. So really having any monies on deposit is not going to make you very much at all. So there's other issues to consider here as well, not just the interest rate, but whether it's more beneficial for you to keep the money offshore because of personal circumstances. What's your home country?
Australia.
Right. And now, from memory, Australian interest rates are higher than they are here. And it's a case of, do you want to keep the money in dirhams/dollars? Do you want to keep the money in Australian dollars? In which case, you may get a better rate of interest. There's a number of different factors to look at there. But overall, we all need to keep a certain amount of money in cash. That's you know, the number one rule. Over and above that, if you're looking for an extended period to actually make anything, investing is the way to go. So you're never going to make an awful lot. Interest rates here, there are some banks that don't have the worst rates around. I think you can probably get a couple of 2.5%, something like that, on some of the savings accounts with banks. But the question is it beneficial for you to keep it here, or because of possible implications of Sharia law, are you better off keeping it offshore? And it very much depends on your personal circumstances.
Sure. Great. Thank you very much.
Hope that helps, Farah. Thank you so much. Question here for you, Karen, around the topic of chasing money. Okay. Anonymous, please. And as I said, if you'd prefer to stay anonymous, it's absolutely fine. We know we're talking about money. It can be a little bit sensitive. Saying, I've been doing some freelance work on the side of my day job for the last 6 months, and the company owes me nearly 30,000 dirhams. I've provided numerous invoices, called everyone I know there, and have even gone in to make a fuss. The tricky thing is that I'm leaving Dubai in August and really need this money for relocation, but I don't have a freelance license, so I don't feel like I'm in a strong position to take this further legally. Any advice?
Oh, now it becomes tricky if you don't have the license, Jan, because legally you shouldn't really be doing that. Mm-hmm. So that does make it hard to follow up. The question is, are there written agreements in place? Was an agreement set up that they would pay you X amount so you can follow that through? I think it's complicated if you don't have the legal bits and pieces in place to do that. In many cases, if you sign an agreement and you specify that you want to go through the DIFC courts, you can follow up to chase debt that way. That can be very useful.
How time consuming is that?
It's not that bad, actually. They're very amenable. They're very much set up on this. But I think in this scenario, because of the amount, it's probably worth having a chat with a lawyer who's switched on to that. Mm-hmm. Again, if this person wants to drop me an email, I'll put them in touch with someone who can give them some legal advice on the position that stands there. And sometimes just a letter from a lawyer might be enough to push someone into making the payments too. I have to say, it's really not fair when you have an agreement to do something to not pay.
That's a huge amount of money.
It is, particularly if you're an individual or a small business. I don't think it's fair of companies to hold back on that, particularly if they're just ignoring you. That's just rude, frankly, isn't it? But yeah, speak to a lawyer. I think that's worthwhile on that.
I'd like that. If you've got a legal friend who can use some legal jargon and can be a bit fierce, a letter might go a long way.
Can't do any harm.
I've got a moral dilemma for you here. And again, no name on this tech. No name, but says, long story short, I looked at my credit card statement yesterday and a significant portion of my balance has been paid off and I have no idea why or who may have done it. By significant, I mean nearly 4,000 dirhams. Am I at risk? Does this sound like some kind of scam or bank error? Do I have any responsibility to bring this up to my bank? Everyone I've asked in my personal life says, that's weird, lay low and see what happens. What should I do?
Bank error in your favour.
Hello, Monopoly.
Yes, that's unusual, isn't it? So you've not paid that, you've not got a mystery benefactor, I assume.
That's the dream.
My understanding is that legally it's not your money that's been paid in. So yes, that could be taken back out. You need to be aware of that. And technically you probably ought to flag that up, but be aware that that money could be reversed out of the account. It may well be that someone's made a transfer and they've got some numbers muddled up,
that's
so it's been paid to
thinking.
You. Now, they will probably realise at some point that there's 4,000 not been paid off their own card. So they'll follow that through and it'll be followed up. So, yeah, it's not really yours.
Don't spend it.
So, yeah, exactly. Okay. Exactly.
Oh, it would be lovely, wouldn't it? That's my dream, to have like a distant relative that's loved me from afar, but I've never known, to die and then leave me
you lots
huge
of money.
Amount of
yes,
money.
And then you wouldn't be sad.
I wouldn't be sad. I would just be rich.
And thankful.
I'm
yes.
so grateful. We are kicking off with this one. This is from Baddie, saying, there are many exchanges who offer a travel card wherein you can upload different currencies onto it and use it for withdrawal during travel. However, you can't withdraw money here in case unused. Are they beneficial?
I think they're a very good idea. I think there's a couple of the banks do this as well as the currency exchanges. And if you're going to a particular country to load that up, then you're withdrawing in that currency without having the exchange rate cost. Mm-hmm. I think it's also, and this ties in with what else we're talking about, this is a really good thing for teenagers. If they're going on school trips to a particular country.
Great idea.
If you can then give them a card that's preloaded with a certain amount of cash, they can use that like an ATM. Because it has a personal identification number on it as well, if that is lost, the money is not lost, unlike losing cash. Mm-hmm. So again, they've got to sort of realise how to use it. But that works for all of us, I think, going to certain places. If you'd rather not carry cash and the card is acceptable, then yeah, why not?
Do people ever still use traveller's cheques?
I don't think anyone does these days, do
it'd
they?
It'd be such a flashback. I was thinking about traveller's cheques this morning, like going down to the travel agent and buying your big book of traveller's cheques.
I think you might struggle to find places that would take them these days, actually.
It's such of a time, isn't it?
I think you'd get young people looking at you blankly, wondering what they were.
Exactly. Daniel is asking, how do national bonds in the UAE work? Are these the same as treasury bonds in other regions, and are they guaranteed by the UAE Central Bank?
Okay, they're not the same as treasury bonds. If you're a Brit, the closest thing you can look at them at is premium bonds, possibly. Mm. It's that kind of principle. The underlying investment is in a whole bunch of things, property, assets. I would say that they are pretty secure and safe. I own a number of them myself. The return is certainly better than the majority of savings accounts here. So to the lady I spoke to earlier, actually, I didn't think at the time, some money in national bonds might not be a bad idea for her, actually, because you get an annual return. It's not interest because it is a Sharia-compliant mm-hmm. investment. So there is an annual return that's normally, these days it's announced in, I think, about March. And you may also win various prizes,
yeah,
and that
what
makes
prizes
the difference.
Can you win?
Well, sometimes it might just be 50 dirhams, sometimes 100. I think that's as most as I've ever had. It can be thousands of dirhams. Occasionally there's cars, there's all sorts.
I've lived in Dubai 11 years now, Karen, and I haven't won a car yet. Do you know that's many DSFers and many DSFers?
That's not that you must be due. I'm sure I'm due one. We must be due them.
I feel
this
like
year.
When
Do
you get
think?
To 10 years in Dubai, they should just give you the car that you see parked at every garage. Surely. It seems very unfair. So you could win a car if you do investigate these national bonds. And obviously, the more you buy, the bigger your chance of winning.
Yes, that's right. And but they are quite flexible. You generally don't have to hold them for a period of time. The money's accessible. There's different ways of purchasing.
Is there a
them.
Minimum buy-in?
100 dirhams.
Oh, it's very
information's
accessible.
On their website. There's a very useful website.
Okay, fantastic. No name on this one. And as I said earlier, if you'd prefer not to add your name to your message, that's absolutely fine. We're talking about money and finances, and that can be private. Saying, hi, we've got gold bars from our home country when moving to the UAE. Now we are moving to the UK. Are we allowed to take it with us? What are the options we have? Since gold rates are not good, selling them is not a good idea. What would you recommend? Thank you.
Right. Well, I wonder how much they've got, because I don't know. I've got visions of someone with really, really huge gold bars. It's probably not. It's probably the little ones that you have. Yes, gold is portable. Obviously, you can take it with you. Quite often, we're just wearing it when we travel. You've got the issue you've got, though, for moving back to a home country is then taxation on profit. You need to make sure that you've got all your paperwork from when you purchased them, because you may need to demonstrate that there was or there wasn't a profit with tax liabilities on going back. But I guess actually traveling with them kind of depends on how much you've got.
Yeah, if you've got one of those armoured suitcases that you see in heist films, it might be a bit different to popping a few in your luggage.
Attached to your arm or something, yeah.
What about declaring as you're travelling?
Well, the thing is, when you travel to a lot of countries, if you've got more than, certainly in the EU, if you've got more than 10,000 euro in cash, you are supposed to declare that on entry. And I have to say, I'm not sure what the rules are with gold. That may well come under that as a...
So worth
in terms of currency, you need to double check, but you need to double check your tax liabilities going forward as well. That's a potential issue there.
Okay, lots of texts coming in saying who you are supporting in this year's FIFA World Cup, saying I'm supporting the Super Eagle of Nigeria, Belgium, Germany, England. Congratulations on the win yesterday. Karen's putting her hands in the air. So do get in touch if you would like to win 500 dirhams to spend, and that's at View at the Dusit Thani, Dubai. It's licensed, it's serving a menu by Jones the Grocer, and it's showing all the FIFA World Cup action this season, open from 4 p.m. to 2 a.m. every single day. Want to win? Just send us a message and tell us who you are supporting. Pop your name out and we'll put you into the draw. Now, if you're more of a music fan than a football fan, then keep listening. Now, Karen, your latest blog caught my eye, I have to say. It was talking money with teens. And when I think back to my own teen days, I was always skint. I've got a younger brother who's very, very sensible with money. And I was constantly borrowing money from him, scrabbling around for part-time jobs, babysitting. But somehow, you know, there's always, you know, lip balm to buy, concert tickets to buy. And I had a great teens, but perhaps didn't come out financially very well off. Tell us about your top tips for speaking to teens about cash and really instilling some good financial behaviour in them.
Now, I appreciate that teenagers probably don't want the money conversation. So this is 10 simple tips to read through. It's short, it's sweet, it's to the point, it's not going to bore them. But I think it's doing children a favour. And something I think maybe we can come back to another time is about the teaching of financial literacy, which is one of those things that I am on one of my many soapboxes about. You know, the simple list, start with teaching them good habits. If they see you being sensible with money, and I'm not... That sounds boring, doesn't it? But not getting into debt, not worrying about money, knowing how to manage things. That's a very good example. Showing them that you think twice before spending something. All these things children will pick up on. And that's younger children as well as teenagers.
Just thinking
as well.
Of examples with my little ones. But it is that. It's, you know, getting them to pick up two products in the supermarket and say, this is the same as this, but this one's 10 dirhams more, so we don't need that. And as you say, just making yourself accountable to them and to yourself, but talking through your decisions when it comes to weighing up the purchase of items.
Yeah. And it's easy just to treat children. Obviously, you know, you want to do that, you want to spoil them, but sometimes we all have to learn that instant gratification is not always the right thing for us. So, you know, it's the good habits is it sounds so fundamental, but teaching that money doesn't grow on trees. And I think if you're just handing over a credit card for things, mm-hmm. it looks like magic money. And so you end up with this sort of idea that it's not real and it's just never ending.
How can we start to give teenagers their own financial responsibilities?
By giving them money to spend for the things that they need, but in sensible amounts. So you said about, you know, the lip gloss and stuff, you know, those things we used to have. And here's an amount of money that you have got that's going to last you for the month. You need to think about what you genuinely need to buy. In fact, there was a study a while ago that showed that if teenagers were given an amount of money that they then had to use to pay their mobile bills, they suddenly twigged that they had to pay attention, that it wasn't unlimited. So, you know, perhaps you give them a bit more and say, well, this is your allowance, but you are now responsible for your mobile bill. So you've got to factor that in. Basic budgeting. I've got to set this aside. I've got to set this aside. I've got to make it last.
That's interesting on the mobile front, because it is quite an abstract concept, isn't it? Because, you know, obviously when you're spending and if your phone is connected to your card, you're getting those constant reminders of what you spent. But when you're using your phone, it's very hard to stay on top unless you're using the app to track your usage of your data and your phone calls. That's a really good point to say. We will pay up to X amount, anything over that on your head be it.
Yeah.
Do you feel like a month is a realistic time for planning? I feel like a month is a long time in the world of teenagers.
Well, you know, those bills are monthly. So I think if you're talking of someone who's 15 or 16, the month is fine. I mean, it does seem like a long time for little ones, but I think when you get to your mid-teens, which is really kind of the age group that we're talking about, a month is reasonable. That's the real world. It may not be very, very exciting, but they probably do need to have a few months where they run out of money and learn the lesson.
Yeah, that was me, big time, begging from my brother. Now, when we come back, we'll be talking about pocket money, we'll be talking about budgeting and really helping them understand financial literacy, whether that's understanding the difference between a credit card and a debit card, the understanding of having good credit as well. Karen Bobka joins me live in the studio. She's 20 years of experience as a financial advisor covering life insurance, tax planning, wills, savings and investments, mortgages, retirement planning, words that makes my soul shrink, and personal and corporate financial planning as well. Lots of questions coming in for Karen, so do get in touch. We've only got a little bit more time. But I also want to talk to you, Karen, about your latest blog post, which is about teens and trying to introduce some financial literacy to them as well. Where it's difficult here in the UA because part-time jobs are quite difficult to come upon. And that's something for many of us growing up around the world that we took for granted, you know, whether that was paper round or waitressing or shop work, whatever that might be, it was a lot easier.
Yes, it certainly was. Now, you can work from age 15 here. There are limitations, strict limitations, but it can be done if a company wants to do that. I've also seen a number of employers looking to take on interns. Some of them are from age 16, I have seen.
Wow.
Now, these are, well, they're low-paid internships, but it's something to do and learn, and there's a little monetary benefit.
Chances are you'll be doing something relevant to an industry or subject that you're interested in. So CV-wise, good
move.
Yeah,
it is a good idea. It's, you know, spending a few weeks doing something in the workplace. Yes, the options are limited, and that does make it harder. Of course, if you've got a business, there's, you know, you can technically get them doing something for in return for a bit of cash. You know, it's, or maybe if you're going back to a home country over the summer, you can send them off and do, you know, the things that I did, strawberry picking for several weeks.
I was just about to say strawberry picking. That's why I've got bad knees now.
Yeah, it put me off eating them for years, frankly, weeks of that. But yes, that was jolly good training for many things in life, I think. But yeah, there are possible options there for things to earn a little bit of cash.
So going back to that financial literacy idea, how can we start to explain the difference between credit cards and debit cards. How can we talk about loans and debts?
Well, I would like to see this in schools. And certainly there was an article I saw a few weeks ago in one of the main UK papers about what was called maths in context. Now, this is not the applied maths that we've done when it, you know, if you've got a leak in a swimming pool. You remember all those questions you used to have and you'd look at them in askance, although that may be more relevant out here than it was growing up in the UK with swimming pools. But I've seen a number of papers. Someone actually kindly sent me a paper, which was interesting, but I still don't think it's brought home enough in terms of the real finances and how to run a bank account. What is the difference? What are the dangers? Because it's so important. And I think there's a lot of adults that don't have sufficient financial literacy either. You kind of work it out as you go along. That's how most of us learn things. Mm-hmm. Because frankly, the small print's really dull. But it's beneficial to read them. Now, we do have the advantage these days that there are heaps of websites. Do be careful where you're getting information from, however, that will answer a lot of your questions on these things. But we all need to know, and we need to pass that information on so we don't get a generation that's getting into horrible debt when they're starting their adult lives.
What about bank accounts for young people? There seem to be a few around, whether that's an app-based rather than a bricks and mortar bank. Mm. Any recommendations or any benefits for these kind of...
There are limits here. For anyone who is a minor, an account must be opened by a male guardian. But there's a handful of banks that will do those accounts. And they will often, above a certain age, you can get an ATM card, you can read balances. Of course, the online banking, and I assume a lot of them have apps that go with them as well. And we're talking about a generation that's very tech-friendly, aren't we? So that can use all that. And again, it's a good way of starting. And these are accounts that don't allow debt. So you can't have an overdraft. You can't have a credit card.
That was my downfall as a teen.
Easy to do. Until you get to that point where you go off somewhere to university. And in many countries, you do get the student loans and the debts then. But if you're familiar with managing a bit of money beforehand, then I think that's an easier transition into the adult world.
Anonymous message here saying, it's not just hard for teens to talk about money. I struggle with my husband. It's a difficult topic that we avoid talking about. Not alone there.
Yes, money in relationships. That's another one we've discussed and we probably should again. Sometimes it's just worth sitting down with an independent third party who hasn't the emotional link there to discuss these things.
Acting as a mediator as you would get in marriage counselling. Yes. Yes, but sometimes you need that impartial element.
If you've married someone, you know, they ought to be the person that you share most things with. So sometimes you're just going to have to fess up. Maybe you need to go out. Do it in a cafe somewhere.
Where you can't shout.
Exactly. Where you have to hold back on the emotions to actually discuss things. Might help.
A message here from Jane saying, my son is 14 and has a monthly allowance. He is great at knowing how much he has for the month. But sometimes runs out before the end. He doesn't ask me for more. He just knows he has to wait until his next monthly amount of cash. He does sometimes ask for an advance, and I do sometimes give it. But that's, I think, an advance is very different to a top up. So
yes.
You have an understanding that, you know, if you've been saving and you need a little bit extra for X product now, that means less next.
Well, I think the understanding is there. That's the answer, isn't it? I mean, we're all going to be a little bit more generous at certain times of year if there's something special going on. But it's those fundamentals and understanding those that really matter. That sounds like a great example.
Saving was always the big thing in our house. My parents would say, if you save this amount, we will match it. And I always felt like that was a really good collaborative way of doing things.
You know, have the money box, even with little ones, have a money box. That's real, isn't it? Rather than just a piece of paper. When you're very small, an app means, you know, it's more about playing. But having coins and the small notes that go into a little box that build up, do these things.
Very quick question here from Peter before we let you go, Karen, saying, can a partner be sued for making up the losses in an LLC company? Big topic there.
Oh, that's a complicated one. And I would struggle to answer that without knowing a lot more about the circumstances. If there's something illegal that's gone on there, depends on what shareholder agreement they've got. And I would hope that partners do have a shareholder agreement that set out what their responsibilities and liabilities are. But in theory, that there's a potential yes there.
And a comment here from Sandra saying, schools create more and more partnerships with companies for students to experience work in the areas they're interested in. Internships are great also as a way of improving the student's college application. Karen Bobka, good. Senior partner there at Holborn Assets, thank you so much for coming in and sharing your expertise.
Thank you.
Where can people find you if they want to read more of your work and get in touch?
Right, the best thing is to go straight to my blog, which is financialuae.com, and you will find heaps and heaps of useful articles and bits and pieces on there.
Okay, brilliant. Karen, have a great afternoon.
Thank you.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.